Now entering the Bitcoin Podcast Network.
Yeah. Welcome to the Bitcoin Podcast. We in outshine. Bitcoins, we got them. Acquire, never sell. But catch us rolling deep like Adele. Bitcoin, blockchains, cryptocurrencies. Three guys faded talking Bitcoin, no fee. That's the free Bitcoin podcast, insane. And adoption is still the only thing that matters, man.
Hey guys, very, very special episode 184. Of the Bitcoin Podcast, flagship show of the Bitcoin Podcast Network. I'm your first host, Marcello.
And I'm host number two, D.
Host number three, Corey. Today we have Taylor back on the mic. You want to say hello?
Hey, everyone. It's Taylor from My Crypto now.
Yeah.
Hey,
congratulations on the big move. Yeah.
Yeah. And our first caller is coming from them.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So I guess without even pretending like nothing's happening, let's just jump into it. So My Crypto has created, or the team from My Ether wallet, sans a person or two, has created a new business and moved to it called My Crypto. In order to continue doing the exact same thing and add a lot of other features along, like in the future, there seems to be some controversy on the process of this happening. And so what? Because it doesn't really matter because you don't need to trust either one of the services to use them. They don't hold funds. They're open source, transparent. It's more along, like the way I see this from my perspective as a not part of this whole thing is that you just wanted to set things up so that you can grow faster. Mm-hmm. Is that about? Go ahead.
Yeah, one of our main goals with this is just being able to have a company that's set up correctly, that is set up with long-term goals in mind. And, one of the, like, we go back in time and, you know, you see the little My Ether Wallet LLC. You know, you assume that like we had our shit together and we went through and we had a bunch of lawyers and we set up this LLC and everything set up properly. Well, reality is that when we set up the LLC, this was in mid 2016, the LLC was not set up with like, oh, this is going to be a huge company with a team of employees at some point. The LLC was literally set up with the singular purpose of getting that little EV cert that says My Ether Wallet LLC. And that's it. Because at the time, it was like right after, it was like right the post-DAO hard fork situation. And, you know, we had seen our first fissures. So while we knew that like, oh, we should probably have like some sort of company, I guess, because that's what you do when you have a business. We never really thought about it as a business. So we never really were like, oh, we really need a company. We better get this shit straight. So, you know, that's the, if you keep in mind the mentality of everyone that, you know, in the whole evolution of this project to this company, you know, a lot of the things that people assume we did correctly, or we were, doing with XYZ intentions are simply like weren't there because we were just such a side project and so new to the space. And so, you know, we just wanted to build. That's always what we wanted to do, is just build. So, you know, when we were kind of forced to grow up and forced to be like a quote unquote real company and we had people and contractors relying on us, it's suddenly a situation where, you know, in the midst of everything else going on, in the midst of, you know, the nodes going down and people being upset with us there, in the midst of trying to scale up the team to deal with the support requests, in the midst of trying to scale the developer team, in the midst of trying to figure out how, you know, I can sleep and hire people that will do their job so that I can, you know, sleep once in a while. You know, at some point you're like, hey, I wonder if that the company that we set up for that EV cert last year is the right thing. And the answer was like, no. Like,
does it come as a surprise that so many people like I see the craziness on Reddit and I think it stems from them not understanding the service. Like, oh, can I still use my Trezor wallet? Can I still use my private? Like, how are they this deep into the game and they still kind of don't get how the portal works or the service works? I mean, is that a little frustrating?
Oh, yeah. You answer it. Let's see. Let's see.
I think all the 8 screens that my Ether wallet puts in front of you as a learning experience to understand how this technology works and what you're actually doing, yeah, they are skipping through that shit hardcore.
But they designed it in a way where it's not like an iTunes agreement where you're like not reading that. I mean, they have like – it's all mostly pictures and it's just like this is your money,
man. I think it goes to show you that people still don't give a shit. They just click through to get to the thing that they want and then like, hey, how do I use this? It's like, oh, I literally just went through a tutorial on how to use this and I still –
I know that just because I'm speaking from experience and I've been dancing with the internet since I was like 8. And even when I get an agreement on like terms and conditions, when I scroll to the bottom, if it doesn't let me accept, I don't go back through the terms and conditions and read them. I figure out what are the conditions to not see this terms and conditions anymore.
Well, how
do I
much
have
of
to highlight
it
a word?
Armchair.
Do I have to answer a
how
question?
Much of it, like how much is a controversy just from people who literally don't even use my Ether wallet or they're just.
That's an interesting question.
I mean, most people have touched it, like. Or people who don't know all of the other things that the MyEther wallet, my crypto team has done for the community in the past outside of MyEther wallet.
There's a lot of, you know, and I just blocked myself from Reddit yesterday because I was, we have bigger things to focus on. And the thing is we knew Reddit was, we knew people were going to be upset no matter what. Like people don't like change. We didn't know what they were going to latch onto.
That's very
true. I also, you know, I'm fully aware that whenever you have a lack of transparency and like a lack of just like the cold hard facts in front of people that, you know, you especially Reddit is good at, you know, they can just like sense it. It's like their sixth sense of sensing like you're hiding something. And then they assume the worst and the pitchforks come out. And unfortunately, as much as I want to just like tell everyone everything, you know, that's my nature. There's some things in business that you simply can't talk about. And that's you know, as far as I can go with that. And it sucks because I'm part of this community and by nature, I'm not one to keep my fucking mouth shut. Like this is not in my nature. And I just, you know...
Well, you guys posted a follow-up Q&A. Was that to add more clarity?
Yeah. So we were getting a lot of questions that some of them we were kind of expecting, but some of them we definitely were like, okay, we need to really go to the basics here, guys. And so the FAQ was trying to address that and speak to some of the things that people are most confused about. And I think one of the things that if you kind of sort deeper through and get past these, all the top comments are very like polarizing. If you get past those, people do have legitimate questions about what is going on and can I continue using the service? And, I wish there is a way that we could have done this to avoid like this picking teams thing that I'm seeing going on because it's just absurd. Like this is the blockchain. This is the space. FYI, there's not a ton of wallets out there. So we're going to just keep building and that's what we're going to do. And whatever my Ether wallet does, they're going to do. And hopefully that's going to, you know, give the people picking these products a better choice. But it also means that, you know, it's very reasonable to expect that you use one wallet for one thing and use another for another thing. And like that's currently, that's how I use. Like I still have MissSync. I still use it. you know, this is what it's all about.
I kind of see this whole thing. I mean, if I try to put it in even the blockchain terms, is that when there is some type of disagreement in the space, and somebody wants to make a change or do something, and the other person doesn't, or a percentage of a community doesn't want that change, then they fork. They go separate ways. And in this circumstance, based on the two entities that ended up, you have 90% or more of the original entity on MyCrypto and the rest staying behind and continuing on the project without those changes. And what I grew to appreciate and like enjoy about what was my Ether wallet is now MyCrypto. So that's the same team that I originally cared about and got behind. So that seems to be the obvious choice and where I go from here. That doesn't necessarily mean that anything behind is bad or not going to do anything. I don't know, because I just don't know those people behind the project.
Right. And everyone has different reasons for using a product, right? Like, we have people that use it because someone told them to. And I think those are the people that are most vocal about this change. And I think that it stems from just simply not liking change. Because that's what the amount of people that, I mean, it just seems like they want to hate. Like, if you go, I don't know, you guys have been on the internet, you know how it is, but it's like, oh God.
Yeah. There's no stopping the internet once it gets started. We almost fell into that until we moonwalked out of it. Remember, we got in a little Twitter beef with the podcast or something like that. And then we just electric slide.
It's a really easy way to get attention, right? In the world where everyone's voice is the same on the internet, like, the easiest way to get attention to your comment is to put a lot of emotionally charged language into it.
Yeah.
And it feels good to get that attention, especially if you need it.
My favorite comments, my favorite comments are the ones that are these really emotionally charged comments about how I am an emotional woman, and therefore I'm incapable of doing anything on this world correctly.
Well, that's clearly true. Women can't do anything.
Yeah. And I'm like, look at the language you're using. Like, look at your comment. I was like, you're emotional too. Like, let's be friends.
Isn't Reddit though such a fickle beast where you can hire the top commented? You've recruited on Reddit before, and then you have like these misogynistic, confused people that are also like the worst. But then you're also getting like great talent from it too. Such a weird portal.
All of our top support people and our top devs, actually too. Our top support people, they didn't even really necessarily apply to be support people. They just, they're doing awesome work, and we found them. And our top devs, definitely came from Reddit. And I've been on Reddit forever. Honestly, I love Reddit. I love the community. I love...
You're an Ethereum moderator. Like, our Ethereum moderator.
I am.
So it's... Like,
I am.
Clearly, you've been around.
I'm not moderating right now, though. They're doing a good job of... You know, we've been more on top of it lately. I don't know if you've seen it, but... all the mods are really busy people with like things going on. And then we've been catching slack on Reddit for not moderating as much as people would like us to. So people have been on top of it a lot more. Then of course I come in and just, stir the fucking pot, throw a bunch of shit at them to moderate.
I had a funny conversation with one of our listeners, Elias, on Twitter. We were just like, he's like, I don't understand what the whole MyCrypto thing is. And I was like, yeah, it's really people not knowing what's going on. And they're just mad that they don't know what's going on. He's like, do I have my private keys? And I was like, yeah, you have your private keys. He's like, so what's the fucking problem? And I was like, great question, man. Great question.
So like, let's talk about what, like, with the importance or the significance of the split. And that's kind of changing the tone of this, but like, what is, now that it has happened and you've created the entity that you wanted, what do you plan to do with it?
Yeah, what can you do now that you couldn't before?
So first off, we're just going to keep building, right? Like, this is what we've been doing, and this is what we're going to continue to do. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different things that we've had in the works and that, you know, we are working on still to this day, like literally commits, like I'm seeing them come in right now, because our developers are so freaking awesome. It's really that stability and that knowing that no matter what the world throws at us, no matter, you know, what shit situations we can get in or what direction we want to take, that the company structure and the way that we have things set up and the paperwork we have and the engagements that we have with employees, all of that is just set up cleanly with a lawyer who actually like wrote the stuff rather than, you know, kind of doing things for an SSL cert. Like, you don't have like a top-notch lawyer putting those pieces of paper together.
You mean internet legal documents are not like the best things to do for large corporations?
Yeah, like, as much as I love LegalZoom, like, if you're gonna have a real business, like with real livelihoods of real people, like on the line, don't use LegalZoom.
Oh,
okay,
shit. Guys, wait, we need to go.
Time to pivot. Does your lawyer give you mobile notifications? Because we get mobile notifications when LegalZoom.
I get that my lawyer has been on the video calls with us for a number of nights this week, just like making sure that we're okay and we need anything and, you know, we have questions and stuff. So we got, you know, he's a great, great guy, and he's been really a phenomenal help in sorting through all of this. So I don't necessarily get mobile notifications from him though.
You're missing out.
I read the FAQ that you recently put out in response to like to how to, I guess, help explain situations more. And in that FAQ, there's a lot of things that I didn't know you had done or built or are in the process of building, I guess, to make your infrastructure better. Like, what? And you said these will be open source as well. What do you see people using these things for?
So one of the biggest like challenges that we've been facing is the reality that a website by nature is not the most secure thing on earth. Meaning that you have the website code, which can be, you know, maliciously attacked or manipulated. You have the infrastructure behind the code, which can be maliciously attacked. You have the build processes for any apps that you do. You have the build processes in this case for like the local, if you want to run My Crypto offline, you basically can download that zip file that has all the files in it. So you have all these different moving pieces. And all of these pieces, if you do something wrong, can be manipulated and attacked and try to steal people's funds. And so what we've been really working on is how do we ensure that when we're ready for a release, when we're ready to either push something live to these freaking loads of users, that one, we know the code is like the code that we intend. And two, that the person who's pushing that code, their computer hasn't been compromised. And three, that it's going to be distributed throughout the web in a way that, you know, if we have like, say like a UI bug or like a typo or something, like it would be distributed in a more slow rollout manner rather than like just dumping it on the world. And so all of these things are going to protect, you know, the end user, because the end user isn't going to be checking whether or not, you know, all of this infrastructure in place and whether random developer over here's computer was compromised or not. And so what these systems do is basically, it's similar to like a multi-sig wallet, right? But you have that set up for like every step of the deploy process. So you need multiple people. You have checks and balances. You have automated checks. You have manual checks. You have this process that you go through to ensure that like, you know, no one thing going wrong actually results in a malicious build of an app or like the website serving malicious code. And that's really, really important to us, especially as we've grown. And then we've also just been, you know, as we've been rewriting the code base, which is all React and TypeScript, we've been really focused on, you know, what are the sort of developer tools or the things that are missing in this ecosystem that, you know, could help. And one of the things, like, TypeScript is amazing, but there's just not a lot of some of the more basic libraries. So we've built some things with TypeScript and how the code can interact with smart contracts better. You know, and these sorts of things are not the most exciting things to the average user, but they're exciting to us. So, you know, there's a lot going on, and not all of it is just like feature updates on the website or whatever.
Yeah, I guess me personally, I'm more excited about the way that you build my crypto, because I build things too, and if I can take a piece of it for myself because it's open source, it helps me do my job better. And the fact that you're looking forward to a lot of these things that you're doing is something that I'm excited about too. But in terms of, like, thinking about the average user, you're right. They don't give a shit. They just want to get into whatever they're trying to do and access their funds as fast as possible and as easy as possible and as secure as possible. And
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see, like, how this changes over time and what, like, as a user and trying to do things, what I'm going to be able to do later on down the line that I can't do now, or like easier or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes we talk about the average user on this show, like they are a bag of stupid.
Well,
but
I'm not going to say that they are, but it's a range of people, right? And especially as we make things easier and the space gets bigger and the headlines happen and, like, money goes crazy and new people come in. Like, there's always going to be brand new, naive listeners who don't understand certain concepts that we take for granted and think everyone understands.
Yeah,
that's always going to be a thing as adoption gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
And I commend you guys for working on the security aspect and making sure the user is okay, because that's what you do when you're producing something. You think about all the failure modes and you assess them and you correct them and you make it, you know, dummy proof so that people can't break it, because people aren't intending to, but they're just gonna.
Corey called it naive, you called it stupid. So are these people seeing all of the My Crypto pop-ups, reading it and not understanding it, or are they just zooming past it and not understanding what they're getting used to?
It's both.
There's both users.
Yeah.
I zoomed through because I already understood all the stuff. For a while.
Well, like me, I was like a Leia. So I was like, what happened? And Corey's like, you should know this already. Shame on you. And I was like, you're right.
You're right.
I wasn't going to say anything.
But mainly it was just my anxiety on it all. But
that's a reasonable thing, right? It's money, right? Yeah. Like, this is where I keep my money.
Yeah. Yeah. It's money. It's change. It's everything that you don't want. And, you know, one of the biggest questions, like, that I'm seeing right now is, like, literally, like, why didn't you give us weeks and weeks of warnings? Okay, guys, sorry. But we've been dealing with these phishing attacks and these malicious attacks and these fake ICO addresses for so long. I'm not going to delay. Like, I'm not going to extend the period of change time as, you know, like, with an ICO, this is what happens. You do marketing, you do marketing, you do marketing. You start the countdown clock. You do more marketing, you're tweeting. One day left, guys, you ready? You ready to invest? You ready to do this? And then about 12 hours later, the fishers come in and start throwing addresses at people. And, you know, all these, you know, naive investors just throw the money right into the fishers' hands. So there was no good way to do this. Like, we're not going to pretend that this is, like, was flawlessly executed. But I will say that weeks and weeks of announcements or pre-announcements to the announcements, it would extend the period of confusion and let the fishers and the malicious players in the space get an even bigger toehold.
Yeah.
I could say from being a part of a few of the anti-phishing communities in Ethereum, that y'all have put in an enormous amount of effort to try and fight and combat all of the people who are doing legitimate or like illegitimate scams and phishing and trying to take advantage of the way to do this, trying to take advantage of the naive investors. Like, the amount of man hours that your team has put into trying to fix that is probably one of the main reasons why I'm following you guys. And I think that's what's motivated you to do a lot of these things. And so I don't really care what decision you make, because I've seen all of the work that you've put in the past that was not neat. Like, no one told you to do that. No one's paying you to do that. It's what you just took charge and did.
Obviously, I would personally probably enjoy the last few days more if there was less hate on the internet. That said, you know, I think that I think holding people accountable, and I think that questioning decisions, like, I don't necessarily want to discourage that, right? Like, I don't necessarily want to be someone that people follow blindly. I don't think that that's healthy either. And so, you know, as much as like, I just want to make the hatred go away right now, and the trolls and the not trolls and the concerned people and the confused people and all that, like, at the end of the day, I can't really discourage people from questioning our decisions, but I would, you know, ask that maybe they do it a bit more respectfully, because, you know, it's tough, and I'm not a perfect person, and I've never claimed to be a perfect person, and I'm doing the absolute best that I can. And there's a lot of different moving pieces. And the reality is, and this is something that it's taken me a long time to realize, and like only really being forced into this like leadership position to really realize, the amount of little things and big things that influence every decision I make, like, are so immense that really I'm the only one that has all that information. So even the top team members that are with me all day and do amazing, amazing work, like, even they don't have all the information. And when you're talking about, you know, the community, it's like the assumptions that they're making are, they're making these assumptions that X happened, therefore Taylor did Y, therefore I feel, you know, Z. And the reality is, like, the world doesn't work like that. You know, everything has so many different parts, so many different influencers. There's so many different things that you can optimize for. But we could have optimized for like the biggest, best marketing ever, right? For this new brand. Like, we could have optimized for that. We didn't. That was like not a priority. Like, our priority was like, okay, we need to make sure that our automated phishing tools like are freaking on the ball. We need to make sure that we have a team that's going to be around 24/7 for this, to basically combat anything that's malicious that happens or any toehold that the fishers bring in. And then what that results in is that with everyone so focused on, and by the way, there was like fishing sites were up like this, like literally we had two fishing Twitters. And
I saw that immediately.
A fishing website, like a My Crypto fishing website up within the hour of the original announcement post. So that's what we were optimizing for. And then with everything else going on, all of a sudden, like, we kind of like turn back and we're like, okay, like, what's Reddit look like?
Oh no.
You know, like,
this is not what I expected.
You know, and people were making comments. And the thing is, their comments are valid. They're like, oh, you're selectively choosing which comments to answer. Well, sort of, but also, like, I'm just hitting Reddit pretty randomly right now. Like, I've got, I think, 340 messages. Like, I'm not selectively going through and, like, reading all 340 of them. I am selectively scrolling to a random position, and if it's something that I can answer in the next 2 seconds before some other shit flies at my face, I'll take the time to answer it.
Yeah. I mean, you hit some solid points. You know, a lot of people don't understand what running company entails and how layered companies are. And like you said, like, there's some people that don't get information, some people that do. And when you're in your position, you get all of the information at all of the time. And you've got to make all of the decisions ultimately, or at least delegate to somebody who can make the decision appropriately. And people don't understand that. They just want a product. And like, I think there's like, you can be a professional rose giver, but there's always going to be two types of people. There's going to be the person, you give them a rose and they're like, why only one? Why not two roses? And then there's going to be a person, you give them a rose and they say, I don't even like roses. I don't like the smell of roses. And you're like, motherfucker, I'm giving out roses. So it's like, it doesn't, it,
where did you know, you it, get don't that try to analogy. Please people.
You make, that's, yeah.
I love it so much.
You don't try to please people.
A professional rose giver.
You could be a professional rose giver, and there's those two people on the planet, and you fucking ignore them. It's like, bitch, you just got a free rose, and you're complaining, or you just got a free rose, and you're complaining. I don't have time for it. Like, I'm trying to make decisions and make things better, and you're just that person. So
trying to get better and giving out roses, son.
Yeah. every single person that accepts this rose and is like, thank you for this rose, I'm going to put it in my vase. That's the person that's your target.
And that's why I emailed Jordan too, because I knew you guys were just building and you guys weren't going to have time for like little pieces of artwork. So I was like, hey, can I help out? And no, he let
that
me.
That was so kind of you as well, because you messaged us and I was like thinking and I was like, yeah, actually there's probably something that we're forgetting. And then like, I don't even know.
Yeah.
3 days, yeah. 4 days later, I was like, oh crap, like we don't have anything.
Why don't we let's take a break and go to the Jameson Lopp interview, and then we'll come back for some more sweet My Crypto talk.
Jameson Lopp. So we've been excited to get this interview to you guys for some time. Jameson Lopp with BitGo. BitGo's always doing a bit of things and they're always on the go. That was lame. I shouldn't have said that. But anyways, you guys should know Jameson Lopp. If you don't and you're new to crypto, you should Google Jameson Lopp and look at his resources tab. And by the time you're done with that tab, you will no longer be new to crypto. I promise you. What else does he do, Corey? Amazing beard grower. Cello, you got anything you want to add to this introduction?
Yeah, he's got a lot of Twitter followers, so you better retweet this episode.
That's our marketing strategy. You better retweet our content. Do it.
Thanks for your time, Jameson. I wasn't in on this interview, but next time.
Anyways, super bright guy. We talked about Lightning Network. We talked about where this.
I enjoy the more technical interviews, and this one allowed me to kind of ask whatever kind of questions I wanted. And he's got a very. Even that we may not agree on some things, but he's very reasonable and respective of his opinions and other people's opinions. So I enjoyed the conversation.
All right. Here it is.
Interested in cryptocurrency or blockchain technology? Or maybe you want to know the hype surrounding Bitcoin? Tune in to the Bitcoin Podcast Network. Since 2015, it's a daily collection of long-form conversations in the form of podcasts where the world's leading thinkers and doers give us a slice of their perspective. With over 9 shows on the network, look for talks on crypto, tech, security, global issues, and more. Visit the BitcoinPodcast.network or find us on Spotify.
All right. Today we are here with Jameson Lopp of BitGo. I would like to start off this interview by saying I appreciate a lot of the work you put into trying to educate the masses on technical issues, as well as trying to get people introduced to this entire space in a way that's not focused on trying to make money as fast as possible, but more along the lines of trying to make them understand how this stuff works. Because like I believe that the main skill people should be trying to do right now is figure out how to become a developer and build things using this technology so that as things proliferate, they understand how to do things and build things and make the world a better place as opposed to just making money out of nothing. So
yeah,
laud you for that.
Thanks.
Let's start off by like introducing the people who don't know who you are, like how you got into the space, what you do, and where you are now.
Sure. Am I coming through?
Yep. Sound great.
All right.
Clear.
So as for myself, I've I've been in the space since about fall of 2012, and I just got interested in it from a computer science standpoint and a bit on the philosophical standpoint. And really, to your point, I think that we're still in the building phase of this whole ecosystem. You know, it's 9 years old, at least Bitcoin is 9 years old at this point, but it's from a like multi-generational perspective. If we want this to be a really long-lasting system, then this is the early days. There is a lot that is still left to be built, and we're still actually learning more about the system itself. And that's why one of my favorite pieces that I've written is less technical and more philosophical. And the thesis is nobody understands Bitcoin. And that's because it is this thing that is constantly in flux, and we're arguing about what it actually is. And I don't expect that to stabilize from a number of different perspectives for many years to come. You know, I don't expect the prices to stabilize for many years. I don't expect the debates over where we're going with the system to stabilize. This is still a very early system, and the people who are involved with it are definitely early adopters and will have a great deal of influence over the long-term direction.
Absolutely. I think one of the reasons I follow you so closely is because I find that you're taking the time to do the thinking in this space, and a lot of people aren't. And it, to me, it's like a beacon of like, okay, here's someone who is critically assessing this space, like currently, what it looks like in the future. And, you know, just, I guess it's just me applauding. You know, I know you're doing heavy, heavy mental lifting on a daily basis that a lot of people just aren't. So I just wanted to get that out of the way as like a personal tap.
Yeah, well, there's also a lot of noise, right? I mean, there's a lot of people just yelling at each other on social media 24/7, and it's really easy to get sucked into those debates. And at this point, I have to filter a lot of it out for my own sanity and so that I can be somewhat productive.
Give us some tips how you filter it. There's people listening right now that want to know. They don't know how to filter it. So what do you do?
Yeah, so, you know, this is one of the reasons why I've kind of changed forums several times over the years. I mean, back in the early days, the only place you could really go to talk about Bitcoin was Bitcoin Talk. And very quickly, that just got overrun with scammers and spammers, and the signal-to-noise ratio is very low on there. These days, you know, Reddit is one of the more popular platforms. It has its pros and cons, and I even wrote an article about them of, you know, moderation versus censorship and, you know, that whole part of the debate that comes up a lot. And if you don't like, you know, the moderation of administrators of any single forum, then your only real recourse is to go and use some sort of software that allows you to moderate what you're seeing. So that's one of the reasons that I'm a big fan of Twitter. It really allows you to curate your feed and curate who you're interacting with. And, you know, it is more work. You're not just being spoon-fed content. You have to go out and do a little work to find the high signal-to-noise ratio accounts. And it does allow you to, you know, then selectively stop listening to people if they're just filling your timeline up with useless arguments or you know, trolling of any sort. So
here's the problem that I find with that, in terms of like a something that maybe the average person may have an issue with, is how do you stop from creating an echo chamber in a place where you are solely in control of how you curate the material that you see? It you need to have some type of dissension, or at least, but the problem is if you open up that too much, it just turns into a shit show. So where's the happy medium? Because Reddit is now basically an echo chamber, depending on what subreddits you subscribe to. So you kind of have to then proliferate all of them to get the viewpoint of the entire space and moderate yourself. Twitter, you can kind of block whoever you want or follow whoever you want, and you get the opinions of people that you care about, or at least you trust and somewhat respect, but you may end up pushing yourself into like a small corner where you only see a very narrow point of view. So how do you like And as the space grows, it then becomes more and more difficult to follow what's going on in a way that's like, I don't know, not so shilly, if you will. So like what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is important to follow people with different perspectives that you disagree with. My main criteria comes down not so much to whether or not you agree or disagree, but whether or not that person is willing and able to engage in civil discourse, by which I mean having arguments that are not full of fallacies and attacks, and they can be edgy, but without getting too personal and starting to throw insults, name calling, yelling of any sort. And so, you know, you'll find that, you know, I do follow and interact with people that I disagree with, like Roger Ver or Vinnie Lingham or Preston Byrne. We have very different perspectives on things, but I find that in general, those guys, you know, I can have a nice back and forth conversation with, whereas other folks, like when I try to interact with like Craig Wright or whatever, he won't answer my questions. He'll throw a dozen other nonsensical questions back at me and basically waste my time. And then sometimes, you know, he'll go on the attack and try to, call me out with various straw man arguments. So there are some people that I respect more than others, and there are people I disagree with that I still respect because I understand that they have a different perspective. That's okay. But as long as they're not trying to throw various fallacies and mudslinging around, then, you know, we can live with each other.
Your Twitter foo is strong. That's what we'll say. I think I just made that up. I probably didn't. Nothing is original. But so, while we're talking about disagreements, the biggest disagreement in Bitcoin's history has been this obvious, the split that occurred September last year, Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin. I think it's unfair. I mean, we started our show with the premise that adoption is the only thing that matters, and that's pretty much one of the only things we care about when it gets down to all the content we put out. And that's unfair from an adoption standpoint. Like if I'm getting texts at 2 a.m. from my sister-in-law, it's like, hey, I think I just bought thousands in Bitcoin Cash. What's Bitcoin Cash? And I'm like, oh, shit. So, like, how do you feel that rift is going to settle? Like, if you could speculate on that for a little bit, how do you feel that rift is going to settle going into the next, I don't know, year and a half?
Yeah, so, you know, there's a number of different reasons why we ended up where we are today. And mm-hmm. you have some people who prioritize the user experience today with making on-chain transactions and, you know, keeping those low, while other people are prioritizing more long-term view of trying to keep the cost of validating the whole history of the blockchain low at the expense of higher on-chain transactions and then building second layer and even third and fourth layer networks on top of Bitcoin as a platform. We also started to see some more interesting, I guess, economic viewpoints, which you could almost classify as like crypto Keynesians versus crypto Austrians, of talking about, you know, the velocity of money and how important that is versus the importance of people using it as a store of value. And these, of course, are mostly theories, and people are just arguing and debating, you know, which theory is going to be the best one. But the nice thing is, because you can fork Bitcoin, now we essentially have two experiments running in parallel, and we get to see which one of those actually ends up being better, I guess, from a market adoption standpoint. So, you know, obviously I'm more on the conservative, keep the block size small and do the more long-term, harder engineering plan. And I've had a number of debates with folks on the opposite side. But the great thing is that I can't, regardless of how much I think that might be a bad idea, I can't stop them from doing that, just like they can't stop me and other people who want Bitcoin to go in a certain direction from you know, running the rules that we agree to. So it is anarchy and you know, free market capitalism really in a pure form. Now, the result, of course, can be a bit chaotic because then you have the branding confusion going on. And so while there is a kind of technical battle that is going to go on in the long term, we've got this marketing war of words, you know, trying to capture market share and attention from people in order to get adoption. So that's when things can start to get a bit more dirty.
My issue with a lot of this stuff is that it's difficult to parse what is technically sound versus the marketing that's behind what is said is technically sound, because there's a lot of things that are claiming to, one, fix all of the problems associated with the big networks that don't have any type of transactional volume associated with them. So you'd never know whether or not they could fix those issues, but yet they claim to, in theory, and people will believe them because they are not, they don't have the background to validate those claims. And there's no way to stop that type of thing. And so you have what has become a proliferation of people saying that they're fixing all the problems without fixing any of the problems, or having, or they may have a novel approach, but it may be, you know, fundamentally flawed once you start giving it scale. And we're not really going to see any of that stuff play out until people throw money at these things, which will eventually fail. And it's kind of scary to see, like, with the kind of think about what the future is going to be like, because there's going to be a lot of really, 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 like, crash and burns that happen from these things that have, like, in my opinion, novel concepts and ideas that really can't be vetted until they have a lot of traffic.
Yeah, there's there's a lot of scams in the space, some of which are intentional and some of which are unintentional. Because the folks who are, you know, perpetuating the claims aren't actually sure whether or not they're going to be able to pull them off. And then, you know, we do have, I think, plenty of good faith efforts of folks who are convinced that they're going to be able to deliver on stuff. But it's still a very high risk environment, simply because people are trying to build systems that have never existed before, and you can theorize about them, but it's not until they get out in the wild and are really in an adversarial environment where they're being attacked on a constant basis and there's real money on the line to incentivize sophisticated attackers. It's not until you get to that point that you can actually be more sure about the ability of these systems to do what they're claiming.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is kind of like, there's some simple rules that exist, and one of the simple rules that I followed is, like, it's usually the team that's quiet and working is the one that's actually doing something. You know, like, it wasn't like Zuckerberg was on, like, CNNBC back when he was making Facebook in his dorm room saying how it's going to take over the world and he's going to have 4 billion users coming to use his social media platform. He was just like, I'm just going to make some cool stuff and just make it, you know? So if I could give a tip of how I do my decision-making when it comes to the best projects to follow, the best people to follow in the space, the listeners, it's just like the people that aren't making a lot of noise and then you go see they're doing real work. Those are the people to follow.
I want to try and, like, maybe, I don't know if I'm going to back this up or go against what you're saying, but, like, technology is only a tool to use to enable use cases that don't exist. And if the technology, like, people who are behind the scenes working are trying to make something work so they can offer a product, because if they don't have a product or something that's actually useful to, whether it be developers or end users, then they don't have anything and they can't make money in the long run. And so, like, there's a lot of people who are working that fail that you don't hear about, but the ones that you do hear about are the ones that enable somebody to do something. And, like, I don't know whether or not the people who are working really hard, at least in the space right now, are going to be able to make a product later on down the line. And it's hard to parse, like, which ones can, like, you've spent a lot of time with your head down working on the actual problems. Where are you seeing things that are actually working making steps in the right direction so that in the end, the people can actually do something that they couldn't do before, or do something they could in a better way.
Yeah, so there's actually so many systems that are out there right now, especially with all of these utility tokens and whatnot, that I don't think anybody humanly has enough time to evaluate them all. But I generally am sticking to the most popular ones, the most valuable ones. And from that standpoint, you know, Bitcoin right now, fairly simple and straightforward, mainly used as a simple store of value and medium of exchange. Because it's simpler in functionality, it's also simpler, I think, to scale it up. You know, we have people working on Lightning Network for some, I want to say nearly 3 years now, and Lightning Network is insanely complicated, but it would be a lot more complicated if Bitcoin was trying to do a lot more than just be, you know, simple money and payments. So I'm very interested to see what's going to happen long term with the various like smart contract systems that are, you know, an order of magnitude more complicated on their base layer, because I think it's going to be that much more complicated to scale them up to become global systems. But as for the actual use cases, one of the biggest problems that I'm seeing these days, especially in the it's like smart contracts token space, is a lot of people coming up with an idea, and the idea would work just fine, you know, as a standalone web app. And then they're like, oh, but we're going to tokenize it. So you have to get a token in order to use it. And so basically the way that I've described that to a number of people is, well, you're basically creating like Chuck E. Cheese tokens, right? The functionality for a lot of these things is not actually really fundamentally need a distributed decentralized token. You're just trying to, you know, hop onto the hype train and cash in with an ICO so that people can use what is essentially a crippled version of money that only works for your specific piece of software.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of projects in that space or working, operating in that space. That's for sure. That's for sure. Is go ahead, Core.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm listening.
So,
did you have something?
I like keeping things simple. And you know, we still haven't really made the perfect form of money yet. I think there's still a lot more to be done just for simple store of value and transfer of value. And that's why the projects that I am interested in tend to be more of the like cypherpunk privacy focused stuff. So, you know, Monero and Zcash are interesting, but I'm really excited about Grin and Mimblewimble and the possibility that they might be able to bring like real scalability and real fungibility to just a digital money system. So
well, we actually had a great we hosted a great episode of a podcast that we're friends with on the show about Mimblewimble. That was a fantastic interview with Andrew. If you haven't checked that out, I'd recommend it. But I'm more of the lines like because this space is so new and nascent, I'm in the camp that wants generality. I like the idea of not narrowing the focus on what is capable of the system and allowing the people to build on top of it. If you get the fundamentals right, then you can scale the system based on a few fundamental laws that are very general, and not narrowing what you do, which I feel Bitcoin maybe artificially did when it made its stack language. And granted, it's done really well, but it's narrowed its kind of future on what it can possibly be. And money, don't get me wrong, is a really good use case. And so it's a network that can survive and flourish for a very long time. But I just like the idea of like general purpose utility and then allowing other people to come up with ideas on how to use it. You think that maybe Ethereum in this case has narrowed has widened its scope too much to make it impossible to scale using the technology?
Yeah, so there's a couple different ways to look at it, and I do believe that, you know, we want to have a general purpose, I guess you would call it authoritative record without authority. So, you know, from a computer science standpoint, I see a lot of these systems as databases. And they just happen to be new types of databases that have very specific rules around how you can change the data in the database. And of course, it's append only, so you can only really add data, but you are making changes that result in a new state of the database. So for Bitcoin, that new state is unspent transaction outputs. Then for Ethereum, the new state is a lot more complicated, where it could be a simple value transfer from one account to another, or it could be a much more complex value transfer that is going through arbitrarily complex logic that's being, you know, calculated by every node on the network. And so the two, I guess, primary perspectives of looking at these systems is the Bitcoin perspective. I think you're going to see long term, you're going to see smart contracts and more complex functionality, but you're not going to see that calculation actually happen at the consensus layer. You're going to see it happen on other layers, and then they are going to sort of aggregate their proofs and put, you know, the minimum viable required amount of data into the blockchain itself that can then prove that some computation happened elsewhere. And I think that's more scalable in the long term rather than doing all of the computation and proving and storing the data into the blockchain itself.
Is that like a reference to Merkle's abstract syntax trees, or is that?
Yeah, that's one possibility, but also you could just be doing, you know, side chains. Mm-hmm. So like the rootstock, for example, is I think going to be a good example of actually having like the Ethereum virtual machine available and being able to do all of the complex logic, but then the actual consensus, like that's not going to be changing Bitcoin itself. You're just going to be cryptographically pegging to the Bitcoin chain. And I did have an article a few years ago where I really wrote about these systems as trust anchors. And so the idea that you need some sort of authoritative record that you can anchor onto, and you don't have to do all your complex logic inside of that system. You can just use it basically as like a time-stamped authoritative record. And then you can create your own systems that do whatever you want and doesn't bother anybody else who's using Bitcoin or whatever other blockchain, and then just be putting your data sparingly as you need into the blockchain itself, which you can then reference later.
Yeah, I don't really need my transaction of buying a donut to go into an immutable record that's recorded for the history of all time. It's like there's certain applications where I need to prove that something happened, or like an entire company needs to checksum itself against an immutable record to prove that everything that's happened within a certain time frame has been real and provable. And everything doesn't necessarily need to go into a completely trustless scenario. So building systems that work around the what I like to call them like trust scenarios or trust constraints kind of dictates how you build the system. And I feel like that's the proper way to scale. And you're seeing like a few networks try and do this. In my opinion, Ethereum is one of the ones because they're trying to offload a lot of the computation onto like layer 2 and layer 3 networks with plasma chains and things like that. And Bitcoin proper is trying to do the exact same thing by making the Lightning Network, Merkle's abstract syntax trees, side chains, things like that, where they use what you've said as the Bitcoin blockchain as a trust anchor, a settlement layer of ultimate trust. But like, how long do you think where these things will be like actually being used? Because it's really early, and none of the actual layer 2 technology works with any level of trust.
That's why it's so funny that I have a lot of people coming to me with their ideas of, you know, tokenized whatever. And my first retort, if it's not a retort of like, you know, you're creating a Chuck E. Cheese token, which is just, you know, restricted utility. My second retort is, well, you know, you've got this grand business plan of, you know, being able to get millions of users and lots of adoption and create a valuable system, but you're building it on top of Ethereum with an ERC-20 token that's going to, you know, have actual cost behind using it, you know, as the gas price on the Ethereum network goes up, as, you know, there's more contention for block space on there. I mean, it's the same problem. You know, every blockchain has this fundamental scaling problem that if they become popular, they start to create fee markets and there's contention over this scarce resource. So if blockchain is a database that is this common public good, then we have to worry about, you know, tragedy of the commons if we don't start charging people, if we don't let there be some sort of economic incentive for people to use the scarce resource in an efficient way, you know, for valuable things. And, you know, because there's no authority over their systems, you can't have a gatekeeper or a filter who says, oh, this is spam and that's not spam. You just have to let the economics work themselves out. But then that results in disenfranchising a lot of people who think that, you know, they should get a free lunch on these systems.
I think that I think what people need is a feeling of security. And what they don't realize is that scaling isn't pretty. Like, people think scale is supposed to be just a pretty dream where everybody just magically starts using things the way that we all see in our head. But if you think about other things that scaled, like the automobile, first it started with red flags and we were like, ah, damn, like 100 people are dying a week. This is a bad idea. Let's go to signs. And then four-way intersections were great with just a stop sign for a long time. But then people were like not obeying those rules either. They were like, you know, screw the stop sign, I'm taking off. And so we were like, all right, let's level this up a little bit. What about like hanging lights? What if we just hang some lights up so even people further behind the stop sign can see that they need to stop too? Like, it'll be great. And then that works. And, you know, people want this sense of security, like scaling is just going to be beautiful. But I don't think it works that way. I don't think it works that way with any technology. And right now they're searching for that.
Well, Andreas said that whole, he said it a couple times, but his whole thing was the failing to scale gracefully. And at any point when you have a certain amount of potential use in a network, people will try their damnedest to shove whatever use case they have into that space, and it's going to fill up the network. And the moment you put out that fire and you increase the capacity of that network, you enable new use cases or the use cases that we're trying to get in, and it immediately fills up with the people who couldn't do things beforehand. We're going to do it then. And then that then doesn't scale appropriately, but you've increased the capacity. People can do new things. They can't do the other things. And slowly but surely, you just continuously put out fires and increase capacity on what's capable of the network. And there's always going to be people bitching because it doesn't do what they want it to do. But you're still providing more and more and more service as you increase the capacity of the network. Like, when the internet started, it sucked. You couldn't do a lot of things. But slowly but surely, we made technological innovations. Engineers solved problems. We increased the infrastructure to allow people to do things better and faster. And now we can have VR over the damn internet. And like, it's slowly but surely, things will get better. But it's slowly but surely. That took, what, 40 years?
It's been what would have happened if a bunch of those early internet adopters who were upset and bitching about not being able to do things forked off and created their own version of the internet. You know, where would that have led over the decades? You know, would we have multiple incompatible internets at this point? It's interesting to think of, you know, parallels. There's so many parallels between these different networks.
That'd be hilarious.
One is a communication network and one is an economic network. But I think that, you know, functionally, they're going to evolve in similar ways.
Just stumble upon this crazy ass tribe of humans that lived under a different internet for decades. Like, what the hell have y'all been up to? That'd be hilarious. That's a book in the making, Elias, if you're listening. So I guess I have a question specifically to the Lightning Network, and that is, are there any myths that you see that you'd like to squash here about what the Lightning Network can and can't do at its current in its current state?
Yeah, I mean, it gets pretty complicated because the Lightning Network is going to offer different functionality, different security model. It works very differently from Bitcoin. So, you know, one of the bigger things that people have been arguing about is like, how centralized will the Lightning Network be? And I wrote an article 2 years ago on CoinDesk that was like a speculative, you know, this is all the challenges we're going to have to deal with. And one of the main things that I talked about was the topology of the network. And so you have a bunch of people who are constantly saying, oh, it's going to be a hub and spoke network and all the big hubs are going to be AML, KYC, you know, banking providers. And so Bitcoin is basically going to get overtaken by the banks, and you're not going to be able to use it without being fully identified, and censorship resistance and fungibility will go away. But
that's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
But you know, and then I try to use a parallel of the internet itself of how Bitcoin and the blockchain are basically like layer zero of the internet, the Ethernet layer, which is this broadcast to everyone type protocol. And the way that the engineers ended up making the internet more scalable is they built layers on top of it. They were doing routing, TCP/IP. Which allows you to, you know, only send data between a minimum number of nodes to get to its destination. And that's really the exact same concept that is being used for Lightning Network to make it much more efficient. So we're only sending data to a few parties on the network. Now, you hear people start to argue and say, well, you're basically creating ISPs, and those ISPs are going to control like the high bandwidth, or aka high capital channels on the network. And that could be true, except for a stark difference in that it's incredibly challenging to start your own ISP. It requires a ton of capital, and you have to jump through a lot of hoops from a like legal and regulatory standpoint. But to create a new Lightning node to you know, further decentralize the network topology just requires a little bit of technical skill and a little bit of Bitcoin to fund those nodes. So like, I am intending to use my Bitcoin capital and my technical skills to run as many Lightning nodes as I deem necessary to help keep the network more decentralized. Like, if I have to run a dozen Lightning nodes that I set up, you know, around the world and monitor, I will be happy to do that if that is something that is, you know, necessary because the exchanges or other big providers are the only ones running highly connected nodes. But I'm not sure that that's even going to be necessary, you know, just from looking at the organic growth that has been happening on the network already. I think there's a lot of people who are very excited about this technology, and that may be a better indicator of its long-term success than the, you know, arguing back and forth over whether or not it will be successful. You know, if there's enough people that are willing to devote their time and money and other resources to continue to improve protocol or network or whatever, then it's got a lot of momentum behind it, and it's not going to die.
I think I really get behind what you just said there. And I think what kind of furthers the differentiation between what the ISP analogy is the trustless nature of Lightning Network, the automation in which it works. It's like right now, like the way the networks currently work is we are offloading transactions based on the network's inability to scale to trusted third parties. Like, think about what Coinbase does. When I would prefer to send someone Bitcoin on Coinbase because it's free and instant. If I'm just doing normal transactions, because it's free and instant. But what I'm doing is I'm offloading the trust and responsibility of Coinbase to handle that money, which we've proved isn't necessary if the technology exists to not do it. And what Lightning Network does is allows Coinbase to run a massive Lightning node, which then enables them to then trustlessly move coins from person to person or entity to entity or throughout the network, so that I no longer have to trust Coinbase to handle that money. I can just go through them to hop. And the network itself is optimized to minimize both the time it takes to get my message to someone else and the money it takes to do that. So if Coinbase is charging a lot of money to route that message, I'm going to go around it based on all the nodes that are around it. And it's just going to equalize the entire playing field, because there's an economic incentive to run a Lightning Network node if someone's charging too much, because you're going to get people to route through you if you charge less. And like, I feel like that's kind of one of, like, yeah, it may be easier to participate to go through these nodes, but if they're charging too much, you just go around them. And that's done automatically and trustlessly. And I don't think people quite understand that, because it's a difficult thing to understand.
Yeah, man. That's hella difficult to understand. Basically explain routing, but for money.
Like, yeah, it's not easy, but like, who do you trust, right? Like, it's like, no one's shilling that. Like, that's not, like, no one's going around making money off that, because no one's paying someone to say that.
And there's no ICO.
Yeah, there's no
unless
ICO.
Unless you consider Bitcoin as the ICO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and so it's a matter of time, right? That's a matter of time. It's a matter of providing that use case where it's like, you keep saying these things, but I'm using it and I don't have these problems. So whatever you're saying is garbage. It's just, we're not quite there yet, because unfortunately, these engineering problems are not so easy, because they've never been done before. And I think it's just going to take time, and the signal to noise ratio will just get better as the technology gets better. But unfortunately, it takes us a while to do things in a way that's scientific and provable, so that we're not going to lose people's money. Because when you make a new technology dealing with value transfer, you don't want to fuck that up. And so you have to do it in a good way. And you can't do that haphazardly.
Well, and it's kind of weird, because, you know, I mentioned there are different perspectives, like sort of crypto Keynesians, crypto Austrians, but I've even seen in some cases, it's almost like crypto Luddites, of the people who are like, look, Bitcoin works the way that it's, you know, set up by Satoshi. You know, you make an on-chain transaction and you don't have to be online to receive the money. You can come back later and check it. And it's very simple for programmers to be able to create software that, you know, listens and is able to validate these transactions. But now you want to make everything 10 times more complicated, and people aren't going to want to use it and understand it, and the developers aren't going to want to work on top of it. And so you have some people who are like, the old way is the tried and true method, and we should just keep doing that and just, you know, make everything bigger and faster, rather than trying to, you know, you hear the sort of technical debt as an argument, which, you know, people are arguing against complexity, which from one standpoint, you know, there is the keep it simple, stupid way of going about engineering things. Like, you don't want to make anything more complex than it needs to be. So there's a lot of interesting trade-offs there that have resulted in some people wanting to, you know, keep Bitcoin simple, stupid. But of course, that just means they're willing to make other trade-offs that I think are not going to work out.
I think that last group of people you just defined are the easiest to ignore nowadays, because it's like, you think Henry Ford would be upset that we've gone from Model T to Lambo? I think he'd be pretty, if he were alive, he would be amazed that we built on the automobile. I like the automobile. It's my favorite analogy. It's a go-to. But, you know, he'd be happy and thrilled that we built upon it that much and we're not still riding around in his shitty Model T. Great for history books and pictures, but that's a shitty car. I've seen it in person. I've sat in one. So I just, you know, those people are easy to ignore.
Well, let's use the same analogy everyone likes to use, is how the internet scaled. It's a layered technology, and the same people who are complaining about Keep It Simple Stupid for Bitcoin are the same ones who are using 14 Node.js apps to do everyday activities in their lives. Like, do you think all of the stuff that makes your life easy now isn't built off some type of framework that's built on top of 7 different other layered stacks that enables to actually get down to the Ethernet layer?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It is adding more complexity, but you have to simultaneously abstract away that complexity, you know, under the hoods. That's what the usability problem with adding these extra layers is, that you need to just like slap a nice simple API on top of it for the developers. You need to slap a nice slick UI on top of it for the regular user, so they can just push a button and the money goes to where they expect it to.
Well, that's hopefully we get there. I think we will. And like I think philosophically speaking, what we call money now is going to drastically change as these things become more and more easier to use. The concept of money to my children is going to be vastly different than the concept of money to me as I grew up. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. I think like when I imagine what children grow up, like the world children grew up in versus what I grew up in, and how they view the world and what becomes like normal to them, I think money is going to be the thing that they see that's very different. Whereas like the children now, they've always had the internet. So information and the access to information is very different to them because it's something that's always been there. And for them, it's just going to be like, well, like one central money, like one money to you exchange in for everything else is going to be a very, very, very strange thing. Them. Like, what do you mean you just use one money? Or like you get one money for the work that you do, or like you go to a job for one single money and use that for everything. That's kind of neat to me to try and look forward into the future and see like what is the world going to look like, or like what's going to be when are my children going to look at me and go like, what the hell are you talking about, Dad? Stop being weird. What if you were to try and do that based on your perspective of this technology and where you think it's going, what's gonna be weird to the children who grew up in this world?
That's impossible to predict, man. Now my parents are looking at me weird because I make fun of them because they have cable. It's like, why are you watching cable TV? What's wrong with you? Why are you watching television? What's wrong with you? They're like, what the hell do you mean, why am I watching television? This was the shit when I was growing up. So yeah, I don't know.
That's, I mean, the world is going to keep getting weirder because it's going to keep fracturing. Like, everyone is going to be able to have their own smaller and smaller like niches and subsets of groups of people with similar interests that are working on things together. And I mean, that's how you end up with like crypto kitties, right? It's like, I like cats and I like blockchains, and let's create a, you know, provably unique cat on the blockchain. And you never know what's there we got one. these mashups of interests and ideas will proliferate and continue to get weirder and weirder, and we're not going to be able to keep up with it all. And I think you already see evidence of that when you put a tablet or a phone in front of a toddler and they just start going at it. And you know, you just hope that they don't end up like clearing your bank account out while they're in there.
Yeah, that's a scary sight, that my 2-year-old niece can operate an iPad Pro better than my 62-year-old dad. It is crazy to see, but I'm like, wow, things are going to be moving real fast, real soon. So,
all right.
Or you got anything else? Are we wrapping it up?
We're not there yet, but I think that's a good way to wrap this interview up. Jameson, is there anything that we didn't ask you that you'd like to say or that we should have?
No, I mean, my main thing about this space is that it is this ultimate freedom that we're all trying to strive for, and everybody has their own view of how we're going to get there eventually. But the anarchy that we're trying to bring to the world can be pretty messy and difficult to convince people that it's all worth it. But it's not going to be a utopia. I think a lot of people are under this false impression that those of us who are contributing to these systems think that we're going to fix all of the world's problems. And there's still going to be problems and strife and conflict, but you know, we're really just going to the root of you know, the specific problem of money, but even more specifically of trust, and trying to redefine like how we actually come to trust people and entities and decide like whether or not we really need to trust them. So it's going to fundamentally change a lot of things about the world, just like the internet has fundamentally changed pretty much every industry in the world. And it's hard to even speculate as to how, you know, all these different industries and just people's lives are going to change in the coming decades. So it's exciting. And, you know, I'm glad to be a part of trying to help build that out wherever it goes. But I'm happy to try to bring my understanding to the rest of people who may be more pessimistic about, you know, some of the more nefarious things that go on in the system. I think that overall it's going to be a positive benefit for humanity, just like every, you know, innovative new tool has been. People are going to misuse it, but in general, most people, I believe, are good and are going to use tools for the benefit of everyone.
So I got two questions for you. The first is a toughie. It is, in 10 words or less, can you describe Bitcoin?
A trustworthy system of record no one controls.
I got six. What do you got, Corey?
Yep, six.
Corey, is you got six? Okay. Yes.
Well done, sir.
All right. Congratulations.
Everyone fails won. That.
You have won nothing, but but it's a fun question that we like to ask. Try and Dr. Seuss this stuff a little bit. The second question, it's gonna be shameless, and I feel bad I'm saying this. Like, looking on your podcast list on lop.net, and just we're nowhere to be found on there. I don't know. We may have slipped through the crack. I don't understand. What are the qualifications to make this list? Is there some sort of list that we can make sure we're checking off to make sure?
Yeah. Know, so, well, there's two things. one, you know, I created that years ago and have slowly been adding to it. But, you know, it's open source and anybody can submit a pull request to try to make changes.
Well
so
played,
generally, you know, people will open a pull request and it'll be, you know, some site that I've never heard of before. And then I have to go look at it and try and figure out if it's trustworthy or they're just trying to scam people and, you know, want to get on my site to appear to be more reputable. But anybody can open a pull request.
All
if
right.
You can figure out how.
I guess I'm doing that tonight.
Yep. I think I mean, we're pretty I speak for myself. I think we're reputable. We do good work here. So, well, Jameson, thank you for stopping by. It's been a long time. We tried to get you on the show. For you guys listening, check out lop.net. Trust me. It is just a wealth of information. Every single person that I on-ramp, the second thing I do after on-ramping them is send them to lop.net, because it's basically like, hey, if you don't know, you can go to 0 to 60 real fast on lop.net. You know, so just to give you an inkling, everything on lop.net/bitcoin.html, if you click on the Bitcoin resources tab, everything is just put there for you. Getting started, online courses, documentaries, the history of Bitcoin, video presentations, news sites, podcasts, high quality blogs. It's all curated there. So you can go read and learn all that you want. And there's no excuse to not know things when this kind of resource exists. So that's all I got.
All right, James, thanks for coming on the show. Hope to have you back sometime. You're welcome anytime to come on and shoot the shit.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. That was the interview with Jameson, engineer extraordinaire. Hope you enjoyed that. And we're back here with Taylor from My Crypto, and we're just going to wrap things up a bit because this episode's getting long.
Yeah, it turns out that interview with Jameson was long. I forgot that. we went for a while. So,
yeah, you guys nerded out for a while.
I'm sure your car ride to your home from work is getting over, and you don't want to sit in your car longer to listen to us. So we'll let you go. Taylor, anything you want to add or talk about or say what's up or shout out to?
Want to thank the Reddit community.
I mean, I will say that to all the people that have, you know, emailed us or DM'd us or are being supportive on Reddit or even being, you know, are questioning things on Reddit, but not doing it with just like the hatred and the passionate language. Like, I will say thank you to those people. You know, we're fully aware that we're going to have to prove ourselves, and that's fine because we're going to keep on building. We're going to keep on doing what we do best. And we're going to keep on doing what we can to make this space better and the space safer. And that's what we're here for. And that's what we were born to do. So, you know, if you don't trust us right now, if you don't trust anyone right now, okay. Like, that's probably a good thing because this is the blockchain.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious. Like, personally, I'm curious to see what happens with my Ether wallet and what the new team and the decisions that they make do to change the way my Ether wallet works, or it just stays maintains the same. So like, it's still a fantastic product, just the way it is right now. And
right, exactly.
And I'm curious to see if that changes at all.
Yeah, and the thing is that I've said this a lot. Like, we've been living in a world where we have very little competition, like very, very little competition. And especially for some of our features, like, you know, supporting all the ERC-20 tokens, we have such little competition. So, you know, if my Ether wallet decides to like go down like a unique path or just like keep on building, like that's going to be probably one of the most exciting things, simply because that's going to give us this competition. It's going to kick us in the ass. It's going to kick us to be better. It's going to kick us to be the best, you know, versions of ourselves. And this is, you know, it's been a learning experience. It's going to continue being a learning experience, and we're going to continue doing the best things we can. And, you know, like, welcome to the party, guys.
Sweet. Once a day, all right, once cool. Again, the crypto space is an interesting cutthroat place to be. And it's permissionless in that you get to do whatever you want. You can't really stop people from doing what they want. And so you get to kind of watch that unfold in real time.
Yeah, and it moves so fast and there's so much drama. You know, what more could you ask for?
I can do it. All right, well, go ahead, Cello.
You can catch Taylor at a... Taylor and team at the largest Ethereum hackathon conference in the U.S. at Ethereum Denver next week. And Corey will be giving a talk on the social implications of blockchain infrastructure at the Bitcoin Super Conference going on at the same time. So you'll be in Denver. We'll be in Dallas. That's where you can catch us. MyCrypto.com. This podcast is on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, all that good stuff. And that's all I got. Anything else?
Nope. If you want to follow me, you can follow me on at Core Petty, CorPetty. I don't tweet that much, so I'm probably not that interesting. But Taylor's going to be at My Crypto. You're at Mojincello, MojinCello.
Yep.
Holler.
All right.
Baby outro.